The death of God is about the drying up of a horizon of meaning and of a whole form of human life.
Where do we stand in the illusion it makes? What kind of space are we invited into?
The material relations between people become social relations between things. When we look at toasters, corn, and TVs,
to a large extent, live in the interregnum between worlds, if you will, or between paradigms. Not many people in the history of the world have faced that.
Zero Squared is the Zero Books podcast. Fiamma Montezemolo is both a cultural anthropologist and an artist. She has taught for many years in Mexico, Italy, and the USA, and she is currently teaching at the California College of the Arts. Her film Echo will be exhibited at an event organized by the Zero Books author Mike Watson, entitled The Elephant in the Room, Talk and Screenings on Social Inequality, Meritocracy, and Art, and slated to occur sometime in December. Echo is set in the border between Mexico and the USA, and it is an ethnographic research on the afterlife and echoes of 9 artworks that have been part of the 2-decade-old public art event called InSight. It highlights the procedures of intrusion at work in such a site as the U.S.-Mexico border, as well as the now canonical deployment of the emblematic figure of fieldwork. It teaches us that intrusion is an ontological dimension of intervention, at once anthropological, curatorial, and artistic. By revisiting the scenes of these curatorial and artistic interventions, Echo emerges both as a concept and a practice that assembles the futures of artworks beyond its expected ruins and remains. It's Wednesday, October 21st, 2015, and I'm Douglas Lane, the publisher of Zero Books and the host of this podcast. In this episode, you'll hear some excerpts from Laurie Anderson, an explanation of the liberatory potential of non-racist, racist jokes from Slavoj Žižek, an excerpt from the audiobook Tales from Ovid, read by Ted Hughes, and Steve Reich's clapping music. The music you're listening to right now is Steve Reich's drumming, but in just a moment, you'll be listening to Fiamma Montezemolo discussing an echo. Fiamma Montezemolo is both a cultural anthropologist and an artist. Her film Echo is set in the border between Mexico and the USA, and it is an ethnographic research on the afterlife and echoes of 9 artworks that have been part of the 2-decade-old public art event called InSight. The film will be featured later this year at the Royal College of Arts as part of an event organized by the Zero author Mike Watson and entitled No Social Class. Fiamma Montezemolo, welcome to the Zero Squared podcast.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Are you primarily a filmmaker, or do you usually work on installations?
Well, I'm primarily an anthropologist artist, so I do not have one single medium. I try to be more intermedia in my work. So I use the writing, the visual materials. I set them up through installations, through videos, through longer film. It depends from the specific project.
And do these works appear in very different contexts, like sometimes in galleries and sometimes in theaters and things like that?
Absolutely. So my work has been taking different shapes over the years. For the first part of my life, I would say I produce more books and more essays, or even if experimental, more essayistic or research-based ethnographic work. Later on, after my experience in the border between Mexico and the United States, my work changed form and start being more experimental in terms of forms, even more than before. And that's when I started working more professionally as an artist and using my ethnographic material as a source, but finding new ways to represent it in some way, if you want to. So basically, I started as an anthropologist, and then I moved to the arts, and now I am in both worlds. So my work has been hosted in several venues, from the academia to the gallery to the film festival, in many places.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about that transition from being a cultural anthropologist, which you still are, but
yes.
entering the art world. Did you always have the ambition to be an artist? How did that transition take place?
Well, I think the border, Tijuana, especially my experience there for 5-6 years, I worked there as an anthropologist of the arts. Mm-hmm. So I was always interested in art, but I was not a producer, let's say, no? Mm-hmm. After the experience in the border, in which I really work and live there daily for 5.5 years, transformed me gradually, and I didn't even realize it how deeply. So I start having doubts about me being an anthropologist in a classic sense of the term, in which you produce a monograph at the end of your field work, because my field work became my life, my daily life. And I started seeing that the natives between they were not really so incapable of representing themselves. They had all the capacity to talk and self-represent themselves. So the idea of representing otherness didn't work anymore for me. This brought me toward the need to change my form of in terms of how to deal with whatever was around me. And that's brought me to be more interested in going toward the arts and going back to school after I got my PhD. And I taught for many years as an anthropologist. I went back to do an MFA in the San Francisco Art Institute. And I work specifically with the installation and video.
You said something really interesting there. You said that as you became more involved in, I'm guessing Insight, this public art event, was what you were involved in. And as you became more involved in that, and the boundary between your field work and your real life dissolved,
yes,
you found that you were no longer interested in representing otherness, that the people that you were trying to represent as an anthropologist, yes, had the capacity to speak for themselves. But yes, I wonder how becoming an artist gave you a path away from representing otherness. How is it that being an artist doesn't put you into the same bind that being a cultural anthropologist would?
Well, it depends. It's a good question. It depends on what kind of artist you want to be. Okay. I'm very interested, as many other people in this moment, in contemporary art world, in the social and the culture, etc. But I'm not so interested in representing us in dealing with the zones of desire. And I think in this sense, the art form is much freer than the classic monograph in anthropology. I mean, I still believe there are great anthropologists and great monographs, but for me, it didn't work at a certain point. Once I finished collaborating with many people in the border, artists, architects, writers, philosophers, all kinds of people, I was not working on. And this working with, not just inside, but also, for example, we collaborated and we realized a book called Here is Tijuana with the Black Dog Publishing, with an architect, René Peralta, and a writer from the zone, Heriberto Yepes. Well, that experience and that collaboration changed a lot my way of dealing with anthropology. So I still believe I'm an anthropologist, but I also believe that in certain way the art gave me more freedom for my way of dealing with whatever is around me, which is not just an essentialized otherness that has it happens many times also in the art worlds, which comes out, I think, from my work Echo, the film you just mentioned.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk quite a lot about that, but I'm really curious about contemporary art, and because I feel like I'm living in a different century. I'm still... When I think about, say, avant-garde art or contemporary or modern art, I'm thinking about Cubism or surrealism or That tends to be where I go in my head. But contemporary art and social art, it's different than political art, and it's different than avant-garde art. How would you characterize activist art or socially aware or socially engaged art?
Well, my experience in the border and my experience with the contemporary art, most are as a critic, if you want, or someone who observes it, I found it at times problematic in the sense that I feel that the so-called social art or political art, at times, not all the time, we tend to think that the marginalized other can be the only subject of conversation in some way, no? Or the only subject involved. We think that the other is too homogeneous. We think that certain categories, this is a discourse that was made by Hal Foster already in The Artist as Ethnographer, a famous essay. Mm-hmm. But let's say we think that just the fact of dealing with the social authorizes us to be in some way more entitled to be an artist that is politically involved, no? An activist. I believe in activism. I believe there are several forms of activism.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe sometimes we are a little bit naive in the way we develop that certain beliefs, no?
Mm-hmm.
And that's risky. This is a discourse more as an anthropologist. What I saw in the border many times has been many curators, especially coming from the West, looking for the Ressonian subject that can express himself or herself in spite of the lack of resources and be a great artist. And then they consequently a certain self-exodism that comes from the zone because it's the only way to have an access of visibility because the art world gives a lot of visibility. So I think we are far from the avant-garde in some way. And at the same time, all of this started in the 90s with what has been the social turn in contemporary art, in which this kind of work has been very much at the center of the attention of the artists, no? So to deal with, collaborate with the disenfranchised community or maquiladora workers or the other, generically call it. We can call it generically the other, no?
Mm.
From an anthropological point of view, it was very interesting for me, but from a more critical point of view, was risky because there were a lot of, as I was telling you before, essentializations, homogenization of the other, idealization, because there also in the other there are, hierarchies and exclusion. Discourses of exclusion inclusion. So in this sense, I got more interested in mediating whatever was of a social-cultural interest for me, less direct forms of representation. So, for example, I would not probably work with people. Mm-hmm. I would prefer to work with other kind of forms, what can I say? And I would prefer to think about the world around me in a more heterogeneous and plurie-ecological way. So not just representing a person, no? Or dealing with a person.
Don't you agree that there is a way to practice, I wouldn't say racist jokes, because precisely they are no longer racist, but take my own country. Till the 80s, in ex-Yugoslavia, we all the time exchange dirty jokes about one and the other. But this didn't function as racist jokes, but as a kind of a shared obscenity, which meant a way of solidarity. Like, I remember I met my classical story, sorry to repeat it. For example, I meet a guy from Montenegro. And again, as you know it from 10 times, we immediately start to tell to each other dirty jokes about the other and about ourselves. Like, okay, I'm sorry if you know it, it's boring, but the standard Montenegro story, Montenegrins are supposed to be lazy, and they are an earthquake country. So how does a Montenegro guy masturbate? He digs a hole in the earth, puts the penis in, and waits for the earthquake.
You're out on the ocean, and you get cool town, free fall to the...
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that's a little bit afield of what you were just talking about, because I think that as we dive into your film, Echo, that your critiques of social art will become more apparent.
Peter.
But the question I have is from the perspective of the other, but not the perspective of, you know, ethnically oppressed other, but from someone who's not as well trained in the arts and in cultural anthropology as you are.
Yes.
But I have had the experience not so long ago of going to an art museum and encountering a work, a painting, which was done in sort of a cartoonish style, but and reading the description of the work and finding no mention of the style of the painting or the way the paint was applied or the way the lines were drawn or the flatness of the work in the description, and instead was only told about the content. You know, this is a painting about a critique of marriage and the role of the mistress and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, this painting could be a photograph, it could be a text. The painting itself, the actual physicality of the painting and the aesthetic choices that the artist made, at least according to this description, are of no significance. It's all conceptual, and yet it's not a conceptual work. It's not, you know, there's people like Joseph Kosuth who creates truly conceptual work or tries to aim at that. This isn't aiming at that. So I just felt that maybe something had gone wrong in the critical apparatus, that we were leaving aesthetic concerns and the physical side of the actual work aside for kind of neat and tidy social critiques. But is that a part of your critique of social art, or am I being you know, sort of a conservative here when I have that kind of reaction? Or what do you think of that?
Well, I don't know, because it depends from the specific encounter that you had, I believe, But in each artwork, you can have also, it's very debatable, no? There are curators that think you have to explain the whole work and to explain the whole trajectory of the artist to make it more understandable to the audience. There are curators and artists that don't care about it and that just think that is a matter of perception. Mm-hmm. So I believe it depends a lot from the specific artwork and the specific context in which it's exhibited. Definitely, it's more difficult to have an understanding of the contemporary, if you want, no? Than the avant-garde, because or something that is considered as a past, no? Because it's the contemporary always escapes the total understanding of what of the form sometimes, no? So you need some sort of explanation for it. But then there are two ways of thinking about contemporary art. I think there is a more people that are more concerned with the aesthetic factor, and there are people that are more concerned with the content. In this moment, is interesting. What is more interesting for me is the people that are interested in both at the same times, and that's where I'm trying to go. And now, it's specifically with Echo, has been a very different kind of work from the other artwork I realized in the last years. Because, for example, I made a work before Ego called Traces, which was the biography of the war between Mexico and the United States. Mm-hmm. And the war was treated as it were not an object but a subject. So I was interested in the in a certain, if you want, discourse on ontology that was going around in anthropology, and trying to decenter a little bit just the human figure. But then I animated the work. The wall. So at the end, I also created another person. Huh? Mm-hmm. So that is a kind of work that is closer to my video essay style now. Echo has been different. Echo has been a work that has been initially commissioned for a sort of reenactment, retrospective of the insight event.
Yeah, tell me about how it was commissioned and how it came to be.
Well, let's say that Insight has been going on for many years, no? For 20 years. And it started in the 90s. And it's interesting because it started in the moment in which the social and ethnographic turn starting in the art world, this interest for social issues, no, or public domain issues, or public intervention from the artistic point of view. And instead has been a very interesting event that was co-produced from the two sides of the border with the different kind of sponsors. So INSIGHT had the 6 editions. So the first 5 were all in the border between Mexico and United States. And the last one, the 6th one, is now has moved to the Mexico City. But the first 5 editions, I just collaborated and I was there in the zone for the last 2, the 4th and the 5th, were basically artistic interventions in the public domain of the border zone, which is, as you can imagine, a very hot zone, no? Very problematic and complex. They wouldn't define themselves as a biennale because their time frame is much larger and extended than the classic biennale style. But the model was like to have artists in residency for a few months in the zone and the production of a new work related to the area. And the main curators were Osvaldo Sanchez, at least the one I dealt with more, and Donna Conwell, people I very much appreciate, and I appreciate this art intervention. This is why I decided to work on this specific art intervention in the border and not others, because I thought others were less serious in some way. They were very serious. And so they invited artists to produce work in the zone for this happened, the last one in the border happened in 2005, more or less. I was helping the artists to understand a little bit more the zone as an anthropologist of the arts that was residing there. So many years later, a couple of years ago, Lucia San Roman, who is now the curator for the Yerba Buena Center of the Arts in San Francisco, she was asked to think about a retrospective reenactment of INSIGHT in La Tallera, which is a space close to Mexico City. And she asked me to do something, to propose a project. I proposed to go back to the border as an artist anthropologist now, because in the meantime, I went back to school, I got my MFA and I started producing as an artist, and to try to understand what happened in the afterlife of 9 works produced over the years in INSIGHT. So I was not so much interested in INSIGHT itself, of course I was, but indirectly, and not so much in the artist work, but in the consequences, in the traces that the work would leave after the INSIGHT and the artist left the zone. And so I selected 9 artworks, and you have people, we have artists like Budisco, like Javier Tellez, Marcos Ramirez Serre, Silvia Gruner. There were 9 artists that I selected with different kind of criteria. And then I went to search and to do almost an ethnographic inquiry of what happened with the work. And it was very interesting because the life of the object that was created in a public domain, for example, or the life of the collaborator that was involved in some performances, had the incredible stories. I don't want to reveal the stories because I think people should watch the film.
Yes, right. Well,
amazing.
Yeah, let me ask you, if I heard you correctly, you selected the 9 different works of art that from the INSIGHT project that had happened at different points in time. You selected them and then you went to see what their impact was. So you didn't know in advance, you didn't select them based on what their impact had been.
Exactly.
You were going in blind or cold on this.
Absolutely.
So how did you select the 9 different works of art that you picked?
Well, I tried to create a combination that was representative of different moments of INSIGHT. No? So the most famous artist, the artist that made an intervention that was very much talked about or criticized for some reason. Mm. So I mix several different kind of criteria. Or just because I like an artwork and I wanted to know what happened. And I also decided a priori that I would go and see what happened to the artwork. I wouldn't if nothing happened, I would say that nothing happened. You understand what I mean? Right, it's like, fantastic, I found nothing, no? So that was the challenge also. But it was also very much interesting for me. And then the other challenge was how to represent and how to deal with all this information, trying not to be, not to have a classic visual anthropology report, you know? Right. So trying to use the intermediality even in the works. So, for example, I use where I couldn't find images, I used drawings. Where I couldn't find anything, I used music or voiceover or mapping. Or I try to find different strategies for each artist and each work. And I usually use of course, the archive that Insight generously opened up for me. Because that was the main point, to find a way to use the archive and to reanimate it through the ethnography.
Uh-huh.
So you have two moments in each work, no? The moment in which the what was the artist's work and intention, and then the actual moment of my research, my going to the border and see what happened after all, no?
And in your film, you present us with a interesting diagram of all the different works of art, and at the beginning of the film, the images you use for different points on this diagram for different works of art represent the works as they arrived originally, and then by the end, you've selected a new image to represent these works as they are now.
Absolutely. So I'm very interested in diagramming, of course, as you could see, and so I wanted to give an idea of how the artwork was initially and how it was reabsorbed by the city, by the zone itself. So, for example, at the beginning, you have like an erratic light around the work, retaking Benjamin, Walter Benjamin, and at the end of Echo, you have the aura that disappears, and what is today the reality or no reality of the work appears, no? So, for example, you had a very minimalistic work created by Jose Parral in the Tijuana side, which was, and Thomas Glassford, they created a sort of terrace to overlook the border with the garden around it. Mm. It was very minimalist, very clean, very beautiful, I have to say. And then over the year now, if you go, you have the same installation, but with, I don't know, a terrible kitsch dolphin in the middle, you know?
Yeah.
Or colors of the local party that is advertising the new politician of the moment, which can change tomorrow, no? So there is all these new strata of interventions by the local population and whomever is interested in the artwork for some reasons. And I found it fascinating how the artwork is transformed. So this is why I use the metaphor of Narcissum and Echo, because and I call it Echo, because I thought in the years that all of us, anthropologists, artists, curators, in some way are in Narcissus that goes to look for him or herself in the mirror, and then what you find is an echo that re-elaborated your words as at her pleasure, you know? It's like very much independently from the good intention that you can have also in trying to intervene the zone.
Echo who cannot be silent when another speaks. Echo who cannot speak at all unless another has spoken. Echo who always answers back. Echo who cannot echo silent, cannot when another silent, speaks. When another speaks. Echo who cannot speak echo at all, who cannot speak unless at all, another has spoken. Unless another has spoken. Echo who always echo answers, who always answers. Echo who cannot be silent. Echo when another speaks. Be silent. When another
echo
speaks.
Who cannot speak at all.
Echo who unless cannot speak at all. Spoken. Unless another
echo
has spoken,
always answers.
Echo who always answers.
Echo
who cannot be silent. When
echo
another speaks.
Who cannot be silent.
Echo
when
who cannot speaks. Speak at all. Unless
echo who cannot
spoken.
Speak at all.
Echo
unless another
who always
spoken.
Answers. Back.
Echo who
echo
always
who
answers.
Be silent when another speaks.
Echo who cannot
speak at all.
Silent
unless another
has been
spoken.
Echo
who cannot
speak
at all
unless another has spoken.
Echo who cannot
echo
be silent
who always
when another
answers.
Speaks.
Echo who cannot speak at all, unless echo another who cannot be silent.
Echo
when another
who always answers.
Echo who cannot speak
echo
at all,
who cannot
unless another
silent.
Has spoke when another speaks.
Echo
who
always
echo who
answers.
Cannot speak at all, unless another has spoken.
Echo,
echo
who always
be silent. When another speaks.
Echo
who cannot
echo who cannot speak at all.
Unless another
echo
has spoken.
Who cannot speak at all.
Echo
unless another has spoken.
Back.
Echo
who always answers back.
Echo
who cannot be silent when another speaks.
Echo
who cannot speak at all unless another has spoken.
Echo
who always answers back.
This is what I wanted to talk to you about next, is that you did. You use this, the myth of Narcissus, to frame your film. And you, throughout the work, you are speaking to Echo, if I'm remembering correctly, or is Echo speaking? I can't.
Is Echo speaking?
Echo is speaking.
So basically, that was an idea that I retook, stole from Derrida, obviously, and Derrida was retaking the mythical episode narrated by Ovid in the Metamorphosis of this mountain nymph Echo. That is too talkative, and she's punished by the gods, and she's condemned to repeat just the last syllables of all sentences that are formulated by others, no? And but in the same sense, Derrida says, yes, but this echo is not just a stupid repetition of other words. Selecting the last syllables of each word in each sentence, she creates a new story. So it in some way Derrida gives a lot of agency to Echo, much more than the passive representation of her that is given at times in the myth. So I was interested in this, different kind of agency given to others, no, to the zone. So I was this was more my anthropological side. No, I observed the zone and the border for many years. I thought it was very active in reinterpreting whatever was given in some way, and instead was an important intervention in the border, and it was definitely re-elaborated in very different way from different people in different moment, and for any different kind of work, no, artwork that was made there. So, for example, I'm thinking about the Water Initiative, that was another work which was meant to recycle and clean the waters. And that work didn't have any future because it was very difficult for the communities, local communities, to take care of waters while they didn't have other primary needs attended, no? And so there is a beautiful email that the artist wrote to me telling me what he thought about the work after years and how that failure taught him many things. And now, in some way, was successful in as a learning moment for him, no, and for his group. At the same time, there is the work of Sylvia Gruner, which is a beautiful work where little statues built on the border itself of a goddess, and the statues were destroyed or stolen, made it in pieces, etc. Over the years, but almost immediately, apparently, but then the pedestals for the statues stay there, and they're still there after 20 years. So it's quite an incredible minimal intervention that is still there on the border, and at some point it seems that migrants would use it to jump on the other side. So it became a functional to other needs.
It seemed to me as I was watching that Echo, as you've deployed her in this film, is a figure that stands on the side of the material, or in Marx's terms, on the side of the base of society. In the film, Echo stands with the city of Tijuana. And when we return to the projects in your film, we see them transformed by the material, economic, and social reality that the works originally we're aiming to confront and change. We find that Echo has kind of resisted the works of art, sometimes destroying them or thwarting them, and yet Echo is also associated with the women who participated with Insight and who told tales of the abuse they'd suffered, who were given cameras to document their lives as they sought rehabilitation from addiction. And it seems to me that the artists wanted to help Echo to change her for the better, but were instead changed by Echo.
Yes, I do believe that you're right. I do believe that I do believe that all the artists that were working there had very good intentions and important one in some way, no? And they were dealing with a sort of intent of transform and be transformed, maybe, no? We don't know that because I didn't really focus on them. I focused more on the work. But definitely, for example, the Vodisco piece was very interesting because for certain women it was a very good experience and they were talking about how transformative it was to talk in front of everybody in a public place, huh? And for in terms of psychological terms, no, there is a woman that talks about the fact that she seeks therapy after all, and she was much better. But she also says, "I'm still unemployed." I mean, just like the material part of her life didn't change. But that's the question. In Echo, I try to understand: do we have to get in charge of a material change as artists? Maybe not. Maybe we are working more on the level of the symbolic and we forget it. Or maybe both. Or maybe some symbolic change brings some material change. Or maybe this differentiation is not a good one anymore. And I would say that all the artists were very well intentioned, and but that is not the main point of my work. And I think Echo changes in the film. Echo sometimes is the subject that is that collaborated with the artist. Sometimes it's me. Sometimes I become Narcissus from being Echo. For example, in the Javier Tellez piece, I intervene because I was present to the performance and I say what I thought in that moment. So in that moment, I could be Echo, but then I become a Narcissus as soon as I take so much voice in the film. So I think it's a more multi-layered and complex character. Echo in the film, and maybe in the myth too.
Narcissus stands on the side of reason too, and willfulness, and that Echo, even as Echo changes the world, isn't identified with the same power. It's a power almost of stasis, of resistance, but not a power for active transformation.
Well, yes and no, because if you think about it, Echo, you just said it, in some way transforms the artist too, no?
Yes, but the Echo transforms the artist, but through thwarting the artist's will and basically returning the artist to stasis, to the beginning.
Well, but the artist is the one that activated a dialogue initially. So it's difficult to really, that's the conclusion, the inconclusive conclusion of the film. It's difficult to really establish who is Narcissism and who is the Echo. And it's difficult to really have a balanced answer, to have really an answer on what is right and what is wrong. Because in the reality, it's not the intention of the film. The intention of the film is just to complexify and to maybe raise questions around our interventions as artists, but not to diminishing the role of the artist or to just give voice to Echo. It's just a way to reestablish a problematic dialogue more and more. And keep conversing around it. So in this sense, I think that also the artist at times is Echo. Maybe at the end of the film is more Echo the artist than the zone itself, because the zone becomes a sort of Narcissism at the end, no? Because it takes a lot of power and agency. And it uses the local needs to become more present.
I guess
as a voice.
What I would say is that, from my way of thinking, the material side of life, which includes the economic and the social, is always an active subject. It's never just a passive, natural fact. But it,
no, absolutely.
But it always tries to appear as if it is simply a natural fact.
So I
would think that the way to transform Echo is to get her to accept her own subjectivity, to give up the pretense of just being a reaction, Maybe. So, you know, in other words, Echo has her own project. And in this case, Echo's project is the project of capitalism and the state. I mean, even when we're talking about people who are the state's victims, they are continuing to reproduce the world they live in. Not that they're morally or ethically to blame for it, but just that they haven't yet taken hold of their own subjectivity to change it. And so there's no, you're right, the distinction between Echo and Narcissus is maybe a false one, but as long as we hold on to Echo as strictly natural or, you know, an object, then we're going to have the same problems.
Yeah, but I also I'm not sure also that the material conditions are just in Echo and the artist is out of that discourse, because the artist himself or herself has certain specific material conditions at times that are very limited, no? So that's why I'm saying it's more complex, the discourse. Now, in this case, seems to be, let's say, divided in this way, but it's not just that. So that's why I'm saying also that at times... is not just about the material condition. For example, you're talking about that woman in Bodisco's case, in which she says that she wants to. Her material condition didn't change, but she's more aware. She for her was the experience of her life to talk publicly in the performance with Bodisco. So, you know, that's what I'm saying, is that I'm not sure we can divide it that way, but I'm sure that Echo has already subjectivity that is powerful and can talk back to Narcissus.
Narcissus is put in the position of being responsible for the conditions of Echo, whereas they're both in a kind of a dance together.
Absolutely. That's maybe the thing I found more interesting, and that's my concern about social art, that it really believes that is more in charge of the change. But I do believe that we are all in charge of the change. No, we are all in the same, not all, but many of us, we are concerned with political, economical changes and the consequence of our interventions. But it's not just because we are well-intentioned that we are going to do good. And we have always to keep an eye on that. No, we're always to be problematized more. It's also an ethical discourse. No, it's not just a social discourse. And I do think that this is also the reason for which Mike Watson included my film in his event, because it raises all these questions, no?
And, you know, one thing that I've noticed online is that people will say that something is problematic, as if it is, as if that means that it should be rejected or cast aside. But problematizing a situation really means discovering the contradictions in it and understanding it better.
Yeah, that's my understanding of problematizing. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
I'm with you in that.
Yeah. So it's sometimes if something is problematic, it means that it exposes contradictions and problems that usually get ignored.
Absolutely.